Welcome back to the Shintar Higashi Show with Peter Yu. Today we have a very special guest, Jimmy Pedro. How are you, Jimmy? Everyone knows Jimmy.
Thanks for having me again, Shintar.
Yes. So this is going to be a four-part series. This episode is sponsored by Fuji. Go to fujisports.com. You could use discount code Shintaro. And thank you to our other sponsors, Judo TV, Levon, Jason, everyone who's a part of this whole ordeal. Thank you very much. We're going to get right into it, and we're going to talk about judo competition. Right, Jimmy Pedro, the competition guy. First and foremost, let's talk a little bit about getting to the Olympics. That's like the biggest deal for amateur athletics, like wrestling, judo, a lot of these guys. So what does it take to get to the Olympics? Sort of on like a technical level, like what it takes to be an Olympic athlete, and then really like the path to it, like what tournaments you have to sign up for, et cetera, et cetera.
So it's, through the years, it's changed a lot, right? So making the Olympic team when I was a kid meant that you just had to be the best in the United States. If you were the number one athlete in America, then you got to go to the Olympics. And every country got to send one athlete in each division in the Olympics. Today, you have to qualify on the world level, on the world stage. And only the top 16 athletes in the entire world in the sport of judo get to go to the Olympics. So you could be the best athlete in the United States or the best athlete in Japan, but if you're not top 16 in the world, then you don't get to go to the Olympics. And then on top of that, each country can only send one athlete for that country. So if Japan has three guys that are ranked in the top 16 in the world, they can only send one. So it's much different than it used to be. Before, there used to be as many as maybe 40 athletes in every division at the Olympic Games. Today, there's only about 16 to 20 athletes in each division, but they're obviously the best 16 or 20 in the world. The other difference today is that every athlete is seeded when they go to the Olympic Games. So 1 through 8, the top 8 guys in the world or women in the world, they're separated in each quadrant by their world ranking level. When I was in the Olympic Games years ago, it was blind seed. Anybody could beat anybody. World champion, Olympic champion could fight first round. It was a much different experience. And you had a chance to sort of, you know, get a good draw if you went to the Olympic Games. Yeah. Today, there's no good draws. You're going to have to beat one of the best 8 guys in the world, and many of them, to win an Olympic medal. But backing up to the original question, you know, what does it take to go to the Olympics? I mean, number one, you have to be a full-time athlete, let's face it. If you want to be an Olympic caliber athlete who actually has a chance to medal in the Olympic Games, and obviously the only purpose of making an Olympic team is to try to win a medal, right? We don't want to get there and lose. You've got to be a professional. What does that mean? That means you can't just do judo 3 days a week and think you're going to make an Olympic team. You have to be, you know, somebody that's on a professional program, training judo at least twice a day, at least 5 days a week. You know, in addition to that, having some sort of strength and conditioning program, you know, whether it's lifting weights, plyometric training, you know, some sort of running regimen where you're a professional athlete, both physically, you know, physically in terms of conditioning, as well as technically in terms of judo.
So what does a schedule like that look like? If you were to just put together like a menu for somebody, like a training menu, what would that look like?
So, you know, most countries will do some sort of either technical training in the morning, right? Technique training, drilling your Neiwaza techniques, drilling your Tachiwaza techniques, doing lots of Uchikomis, doing lots of Nagi Komis, throws in the crash pad. Yeah. Maybe some rounds of Neiwaza in the morning, you know, live rounds of Neiwaza training in the morning, maybe an hour and a half technical and Neiwaza type training. In the afternoon, some sort of strength and conditioning, whether it's, you know, mobility exercises or, like I said, plyometric type exercises or maybe even Olympic style lifting. Obviously, it depends on your weight class and, you know, a lot of variants go into it, but some sort of physical conditioning in the afternoon. And then in the evening, you would basically do a Randori training, anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours at night. Most of it is Tachiwaza, stand-up randori, but, you know, at an academy like mine, we've split it 50-50. We do 50% Neiwaza, 50% Tachiwaza, because we don't have the bodies in the room to get 10 good randoris in standing, so we break up the training. But it's definitely 2 trainings a day in judo minimally and some sort of other physical conditioning. And then Saturdays, maybe 1 training on a Saturday and Sunday being a rest day.
And when I was training up there, we did like front-loaded Monday through Wednesday, and it kind of tapered off a little bit. Do you guys still do that kind of a thing?
We do that because most of the competitions are on weekends, And we
Yeah,
want our
it's
athletes
true.
to be fresh and rested on weekends, especially most of our guys right now, they're not at that Olympic level of competition.
Yeah.
And we want them going to competitions every Saturday or Sunday, wherever they can go. Drive, get in a car, drive 5 or 6 hours to Jersey, New York,
Yeah.
Canada, wherever they got to go, get as many matches as they can. And not that we need them rested for that time period, but we also don't want them beat to hell every day of the
Yeah,
week either.
it's true.
You know,
Yeah.
so they're competing on weekends. And yes, it's hard to get a lot of extra bodies at the dojo on weekends to train.
That's
Monday
true.
Monday
Yeah.
through Thursday night is, you know, people you can get the recreational players to come in and be a good training partner
Yeah.
during the week.
That's true. That's true. Okay, so that's like the training side of getting to the Olympics. What are the other sort of like the characteristic side, the actual logistics of getting there by points or qualifications or whatnot?
So I think before we jump into the competition side of how you qualify for the Olympics, I think the biggest thing that I want everybody to understand is development is key. That as an athlete grows, it's important that they compete at the level that they should be competing at to develop properly. What does that mean? That means that instead of hurrying up and trying to make a world team or an Olympic team or go to the Paris Grand Slam, it's important that the athlete competes at their level and learns and develops their judo at each level and can actually execute and do their techniques against local people first, right? So go to all of the local competitions, get 10, 12 matches in a weekend, and work on your weaknesses or work on your new techniques that you're trying to develop because judo is all about confidence. You've got to be
Yeah.
able to do the technique over and over again, knowing that it's going to succeed for you when you get to the highest levels. And by developing properly and getting maybe 100 matches a year in at the local stage, and you're winning, you know, 80, 90% of those matches, then you're ready to go to the next level, which is the international scene, right? And when you go to the international level, you have to go where you can win. I believe that every athlete, when they compete, should believe that they can win the competition that they're entering. That doesn't mean that they have to win. It means that they're physically and mentally and technically ready. If they have a good day, they can win the tournament. Okay?
Yeah.
And that gives them confidence when they go into the matches. Hey, I should beat this person. And even if they do, great. If they don't, at least they competed and maybe they didn't get beat by Ippon in 10 seconds or
Yeah.
got smashed in the first round. Maybe they got a lot of match time. They spent a lot of time on task, right? Because experience is key in judo. If you get a lot of time competing, you get used to competing. You get
Yeah.
comfortable competing. You're no longer anxious. You don't have that, you know, you're not worried. You're not nervous anymore because it's something you do all the time. When you're not anxious, now you can think when you compete. You can learn, you can develop, you can try new things because it's not about winning and losing. It's about developing your judo for the next time. The
Yeah.
more matches we get, the more experience we get, the more comfortable we get competing, now we're learning. Then we come back to the dojo, say, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? What do we need to improve? Go to the next event. When we start winning
Yeah.
locally and regionally, then we go
Yeah.
nationally. Once we're winning nationally, then we go internationally at a level where again, we can get a lot of matches. Hopefully, wherever we compete, there's some sort of training camp afterwards where we can train for a full week against people that are better than us so our level can go up. And
Yeah.
really, the competition isn't about winning the tournament. It's about believing I can win when I get there. Whether I win or I don't, doesn't matter. I'm going to go to the training camp and I'm going to get my hands on as many good people as I can so my reactions, my level, everything goes to another level. And we're
Yeah.
developing, we're getting better, we're getting stronger each time we compete or we train. And when I'm ready and I can win at that like lower level international scene, now I'm ready to take the step to go to a Grand Prix and test my skills.
Yeah.
And again, when we first go to Grand Prix, we don't
Yeah.
have a lot of money. So we want to make sure that there's a camp after the tournament or I can stay and train in Europe or train in Japan or wherever it is and get those randoris and get my hands on better people all the time. So I'm chasing better people and I'm only as good as the level I train with. You
It's
know, so
true.
if I'm
Yeah.
training with good guys, my level goes up. If I'm the
Yeah.
best guy in the room all the time, I'm only getting worse, I'm not getting better. So I've
Yeah,
got
that's a
to
good
chase
argument.
the better people, you know?
Yeah.
In order to qualify, you know, for the national team, let's say, you know, the
So
theory
what is
is that I
national
have.
team for our listeners? Like, what does that entail, the national team?
Quite honestly, United States Judo right now doesn't necessarily have a national team where they say, hey, you're a national team member, but it's somebody that represents the United States outside of America,
I thought it
right?
was top five in the country has the right to go international. So if you're top five in the country, you're on the national team, essentially. Is that not
You
how
have to
they
be
do it
on the
anymore?
national roster. You have to be on the
That's it?
national ranking roster to go
Yeah.
internationally. Yeah, I
That's
think
it?
you might have to have a certain level,
Yeah.
you know, but pretty
So
much they
theoretically, like one of my black belts can, you know, go to Jimmy Pedro Invitational, right? Which is an E-level tournament, or is it a D-level tournament?
It used to be an E-level tournament. It's no longer any level.
Okay. So let's say if I go to an E-level tournament, not me, but like one of my guys go, gets a point. He wins the tournament. He gets on the national roster. Now he can go international competition.
If he's a, I think if he's a black belt and he's on the national ranking roster and no other athlete wants to compete in that event, he's able to go to the open tournaments, like the Pan American Opens, the European Opens, that level of event. Yes.
Nice.
Once
Wow,
an
that's pretty
athlete,
cool.
once, yeah, so they won't stop
Yeah.
anybody if they're willing to pay their way,
Yeah.
you know, and they're on the national ranking roster.
Yeah.
They can go do those level events. And that's the way it should
Wow.
be. You should, you know,
Yeah.
you don't want to hold somebody back that's willing to go put pay their dues and pay their time, but
Yeah.
that athlete should have to medal at a certain number of those events before they're eligible to go to sort of a Grand Prix level event, right?
Yes. Yeah. So what's the
And then
qualification now to get through the system?
it's all outlined on USJudo.org or USAJudo.com has the national ranking rosters. They keep a roster of all the athletes, what they're currently ranked on in the national scene. And they do have some criteria to get to the next level of events. But soon as you like make that level where you're top, sorry, once you make the level where you finish top five in one
Yeah.
of those Pan American Opens, you're automatically ready to go to like Grand Prix, Grand Slam, and even represent the team potentially at the Japan Grand Slam or the
Yeah.
Paris Grand Slam, which is a big jump. You know
Yeah,
what I mean? I think
huge, huge.
a lot of
Yeah.
our athletes aren't ready for that.
No,
But
yeah.
in order to make the world team every year, there's a criteria to make the United States world team. And right now, in order to go to the World Championships, you have to be, I think it's currently top nine athletes on the world ranking list are eligible to go to the World Championships. So what does that mean? That means that if we take the first place person, or I should say, the people with the most amount of points on the world ranking list,
Yeah.
they rank them one through
Yeah.
nine in the United States. And whoever those people are, you get to go represent the team at the World Championships. But we can only have a maximum of two athletes in each division. So if there's a third athlete that's ranked in that top nine in the division, that person doesn't get to go. It'll
Yeah.
default to the next person on the list.
Interesting. Interesting. So theoretically, right, if someone was, let's just say, like 73 kilos, like your division, who's number one at 73 is Jack Janetska, right? For the US, and then who, is there somebody behind him?
So it was Dominic Rodriguez.
Okay.
He recently got injured. He tore his ACL,
Oh.
partially tore his ACL, so he was
Yeah.
out for a while. I think he's since moved up to 81 kilos, but
Okay.
he was going to be the second person that went to the World Championships at 73.
Yeah.
He injury defaulted and pulled out. The next guy in line was a kid named Kai Wallace, the Japanese
Okay.
boy.
All right. Yeah, no.
He declined going to the Worlds because he's still a junior, and so
Okay.
it went
Yeah.
down to the next person on the team.
Okay. So you don't have to be like top nine in the world. It's just the
No,
top
you just have
nine.
to be top nine ranked amongst all the Americans on the male side and top nine ranked on the female side. So for the World
Oh,
Championships, we send
okay.
nine men, nine women usually to the World
Okay, that's
Championships.
it.
That's it.
Wow. That's a unique thing, right?
It's fairly new, yes.
Yeah. So what's harder to win, the World Championships or the Olympics, you think? Excluding the fact that the Olympics comes once every 4 years. Let's just say on a given year, Olympic year 2024, you've already made it versus 2025. Let's just say 2026.
They actually have a World Championships now every year, including the
Oh,
Olympic year.
including the Olympic year? Wow, interesting. Oh, that's
So they
pretty
have a
cool.
Worlds every
Yeah.
year now. So it's every year they have a World Championships. At the World Championships, each country gets to send nine representatives, their best nine. They can pick
Yeah.
any divisions, but they can only have two
Yeah.
guys per weight class. So Japan, for example, typically they send two people at 73 kilos.
Yes,
Ono,
they do. Yeah.
Ono and Hashimoto. And they also send two people at 66, Abe and Maruyama. That's who they typically send. And they send one in the other divisions. But at the World Championships, it's a much deeper field of athletes. You'll have as many as 80, 85 men in a division at the World Championships. Whereas the Olympic Games, you're going to have a maximum of like 22 to 24 athletes.
Yeah. There are like wild card situations, though, right? Like continental quotas and things like this that kind of come into play.
Yeah. So there's 16 of the best in the world. Then there's like wild card slots. And then there's refugee slots. And then there's continental quota slots.
Wow. Wow.
What an interesting thing. To answer your question, the World Championships is harder to win than the Olympic Games currently in the world of judo. But it comes around only every 4 years, so there's a lot more pressure.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot more anxiety. Yeah. There's a lot more focus, attention on it. So from an anxiety or pressure situation, the Olympics has more pressure attached to it.
Yeah.
But technically, you got to be a lot better to win the World Championships.
Yeah. Do you remember the time when they used to do the top six in the Pan Ams qualifies the weight class, and then the best guy, if the weight class is qualified, automatically has a spot in the Olympics? Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
That was
changed quite a bit over the time. Like I said, when I was an athlete, my first Olympic team, all I had to be the best American.
That's
we had an Olympic trials. They invited the best five people, and you know, five people in each category.
Yeah.
Went to an Olympic trials, and you fought head to head. Whoever won that tournament, if you were the number one ranked athlete going into the event, you're automatically on the Olympic team if you won the trials.
Yeah.
If you were ranked 2 through 5 and you beat the number one person in the first Olympic trials, we came back and we fought a best 2 out of 3 scenario head to head.
Yeah.
To see who was the best in the country. And then we got one slot per category. So we used to send 7 men, 7 women went to the Olympic Games when I was young.
Mm.
As I got older, the Olympic field started going smaller and smaller, and it became where you had to be ranked, you know, in the Pan American Union. If you were top so many in the Pan Am Union, then you reserved a slot for your country. Then there was a trials for that slot, and that's who we had trials for, the people that qualified.
Yeah.
Then, now it came to a point where I think when Travis and Kayla and Marty were competing, it was the top 22 athletes in the world.
Yes, that's what it was.
Go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
And now we're down to only 16 athletes per category. So it keeps shrinking and shrinking.
Yeah.
And
why is that?
Harder and harder.
Why do you think they're doing that?
Because the Olympic, all of the Olympic sports are growing. Every year, whoever hosts the Olympics gets to introduce new sports to the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
So I think, I forget the sports coming. Flag football is a sport that's coming in 2028 as an example.
Yeah, we don't need
that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new sports, and as they create new sports, they've got to take away from existing sports to create space and slots for the new sports, because the Olympics is too big for people to host. They can't put all these people in a village. They can't. They don't have housing. They don't have infrastructure. They don't have sports fields.
Yeah.
So they've got to shrink down the number of people in each sport to make way for the new sports.
I say get rid of like swimming, you know, it's like freestyle 50, freestyle 100, freestyle 200, and then you go relay, and then you go backstroke, breaststroke, butterfly. It's like, come on, you know? Ridiculous.
They have a lot more opportunity, let's say that, than we ever will in this sport.
Yeah, those guys are like, I'm a 19-time Olympic gold medalist. It's like, how's that even possible, right?
Yeah, and I'm 22 years old.
That's, So what is the path? If someone's listening right now and they're like, all right, I want to make an Olympic team. Like, what do you think, aside from like being blessed with good genetics, being blessed with a good coach already, they have like judo support system, they have the money to be able to travel. Like in terms of like what competitions should they go for? Like what is that logistical path?
Well, when they're ready to step up on the world stage, so they've already developed properly, they've already done everything to develop, and they've won, you know, at that local, regional, national, and lower level international level, then they really have to get on the world circuit. They have to be a full-time judo athlete. They're not going to be able to work a job. They're not going to be able to go to school full-time. The rest of the world is doing judo full-time. They're being paid to do the sport of judo, and they're training twice a day. They're competing all the time. So the only way to beat them, you've got to train like them. You've got to be like them. Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got to be a full-time judo athlete. What that means is that you're going to spend somewhere between 4 months and 6 months away from your house.
Yes.
Competing traveling and training around the world on the World Judo Tour in order to qualify for the Olympic Games, which means you need a lot of money. When you think about it, right, in order to qualify for the Olympics right now, you have to have six results each year. So in order to get six results, you probably have to, unless you're a superstar, you probably have to compete in a minimum of 12 events. Minimum 12 events. That's 12 times away from your house. You have to understand, there's not a single tournament in the United States that will help qualify you for the Olympics. There's not a single tournament right now in Canada that's a Grand Prix or Grand Slam level that's going to get you enough points. And in fact, there's nothing in the North or South Hemisphere that will get you enough points to qualify for the Olympics. So you've got to be competing in Europe, Asia. Basically, Europe and Asia are the only two places that you can qualify and get enough points to make it worth your while.
But there's Continental Opens in the Pan American region. There's just not enough points?
You only get 100 points if you win a Continental Open.
Yeah, that's not a lot of points. How many points do you need, you think?
If you win a Grand Prix level, you get 700 points. Wow. So the Grand Prix are worth seven times what a Continental Open is.
Yeah.
So you can go to a Grand Prix, win one match, maybe get a bye, win one match. You get more points than if you won the Continental Open. So when you're like trying to qualify for the Olympics, all of your events have to be Grand Prix, Grand Slam, World Championship, or Continental in order to make it worth your while.
Yeah, you know, back in the day, it was a different point system, right? Like, used to be the Continental Open was a World Cup. And I remember I took third at the Brazil World Cup. And that, like, shot me up so high. It was like, holy moly, now I'm like, whatever it is. But I guess they really put a gap between the Continental Open and the Grand Prix, right?
So the World Championships used to only be worth, like, 700 points if you won a World Championship.
Yeah.
And a Grand Slam was, like, 400 points. The Continental Open was 100 points.
Yeah.
So they were pretty close. Now the world is, like, 2,000 points.
Wow, Jesus.
It's worth 20 times what a Continental Open is.
Yeah.
You know, the Grand Slams are worth like 1,000 points. So like 10 times what a Continental Open is. So you've got to be going to Grand Prix, Grand Slam level tournaments in order to qualify for the Olympic Games, which means you're always fighting against the best in the world.
True.
Which means you've got to be able to beat, and everybody's seated. So you've got to be able to beat one of the top 10, top 15 guys in the world. Yeah. Just to get past the quarters to get any real points. So it's a tall order, but, you know.
It really is. So all you got to do is win an Olympics, win a World Championships, get some points there, win like four Grand Slams, and you're good. You qualify for the Olympics. Is that right?
You've got to be top seven.
Yeah.
And Grand Prix and Grand Slams all the time.
Yeah.
Or posting medals in order
but
to
qualify. But the Pan Ams is a huge one. Pan American Championships, right? Used to be the golden ticket. It's not like that anymore?
Now it's winning the Pan Ams is equivalent to winning a Grand Prix. It's the same level as a Grand Prix tournament.
I mean, 700 points, not bad, considering how much easier it is to win a Pan Am compared to how difficult it is to win a Grand Prix, right?
No question.
Yeah, so you have to get to the Pan Ams. That's kind of the
depending path. On what weight class you're in. If you're in the 57, if you're in the 57 kilo female division,
that's
and you've got Deguchi, you got Deguchi and Klim Kate, and you've got Rafaela Silva.
Ooh,
not so
that's
easy.
A tough one. Yeah.
Not
yeah.
so easy.
Eesh. Man, that's brutal.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a tall order. And in addition to those 12, you have to realize when you go to those 12 tournaments, you're getting on a plane from America and you're flying over to Europe or you're flying all the way to like Japan. You're talking 12 hours, 15 hours of travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giving up 4 or 5 days, right? You're going to fly in a day or two early. You got to make weight. You got to compete in the event. Get on a plane, you either come home or you stay for a week or two of training. Then you go to the next tournament. Oof. You know what I mean? So, like, you're on the road 6 months out of the year if you're trying to go to the Olympics today.
And they're still doing, like, the, you know, the tours, right? Asia tours happening. There's, like, five or six back-to-back over here. European tour happening five or six back-to-back, kind of?
Not as back-to-back as they used to be, Shintaro. So
that's not good.
No,
it used to be I could go Korea, China, Grand Slam, and Japan. That's what I did. I did the Korea Open, China Grand Prix, and then the Tokyo Grand Slam. And I stayed in Japan for 2 weeks after that. It was a 5-week ordeal, dude. You know, it was a lot.
You can do some back-to-back, but most of the time there's 2 weeks in between the tournaments now. They're spread further apart, which means you got to be on the road even longer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And stay.
Are the training camps 2 weeks now?
They only do 3-day training camps after the tournament. They go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Everybody pretty much goes home Thursday.
Wow.
Or goes to another event.
Why did that? Why did they do that?
I mean, I think it's a lot of infrastructure for the, you know, a lot of the people stay for the training camps now, the 3-day camps. Yeah. So a lot of people will stay. And they just have, you know, 600, 800 athletes staying for those camps. It takes a lot of infrastructure to pull those off.
Man, do you like the new system?
I don't. No. I mean, I like the way the World Tour is set up, yes. I do like it. But there's an unfair advantage to the Europeans and the Asians. And there's not enough money in North and South America. If you think about it, Brazilians, Americans, Canadians...
Yeah,
we don't have any Grand Prix, Grand Slams in North or South America.
Yeah,
nothing, not a single tournament.
But used to be Brazil Grand Slam was a thing. I fought in that one.
They
don't have
afford,
it.
They can't afford to run the tournament anymore. It's too expensive to run those events.
How much does it cost to run those events, then?
I'm not 100% sure, but they at least have to come up with like $350,000 in prize money to run a Grand Slam.
Oh, yeah, there's prize money.
So you're probably talking $500,000. You've got to put out $500,000 that you might never get back.
I mean, you probably won't get it back, right? I mean, unless you have, like, TV sponsorships and this and that.
And
man, that's
just
brutal.
Not on TV enough in Brazil or in the United States to get our money back. So it's a huge investment. And there's no reason for the Europeans and the Asians to come over here to America to compete. Because they have so many in their backyard. Why would they have that expense? Why would they deal with jet lag when they can just fly an hour, 2 hours, and get all the tournaments that they want?
Yeah. Do you remember Miami Grand Prix? Miami World Cup? Remember that one?
They don't have that anymore.
That was a really good one too, right?
Yep.
Now, you coached me in that one, remember?
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, it's great experience for the athletes in our country. Having Grand Prix in this country is good for our athletes. It gives our young guys a chance to compete against the best people in the world on your home turf.
Yep.
You get that level of energy where you're confident. You can't wait to show yourself and shine. The other people are dealing with jet lag for one, so it's great for our athletes because they're tired and they're moaning about jet lag, whereas we do it every day, every competition, we're always dealing with it. So it gives us a little advantage that way. I used to love when the tournament was in Colorado Springs because then not only did they have to deal with jet lag, they had to deal with altitude.
That's very true.
Colorado Springs is a really difficult place to compete.
It is.
You're talking about altitude.
And you had a gas tank, so you were that really shining there, right? Jeez. Man.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I would love to see tournaments come back over here.
Through the years, it's changed a lot. But I will say this. The World Judo Tour right now is super professional. Yeah. I love how accessible, the media is. You can watch any event anywhere in the world, live streamed, all great broadcast with commentary. At the click of a button, you get to watch all your favorite players. And it's amazing because it really brings judo to the whole world.
Yes. Do you watch Judo TV? Tour,
all the time.
Yeah.
I watch every event. I got two screens going at work. I got one screen watching judo, one screen responding to emails.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love doing it.
Yeah, it's great. Judo TV is unbelievable. You guys can also, who are listening, you can use discount code Shintaro and then get a subscription. It's the best. It's the best. So, all right, here's the next question.
Sure.
BJJ guys always say Abu Dhabi Championships is our Olympics. ADCC is our Olympics. And some people argue that the ADCC is much tougher to win than a Judo Olympics. What do you think about that?
No chance.
Not even close.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, the guys that win the ADCC are very, very skilled, right? Like, I don't discredit. Gordon Ryan is an amazing athlete, right? He shines at ADCC, heads and tails above everybody. He fights the whole tournament, wins the whole tournament, fights the super fights, fights the opens. Like, he's a phenomenal athlete, right? And so are the other guys that are winning. But if you look at, like, you just look at any sport, right? And you look at the number of people that actually dedicate themselves full time to doing that sport and that sport alone.
Yeah.
They don't have the depth. They don't have the level of competition that judo has, right? Not yet. They'll get there, but not yet. You give it 15 years, 20 years, these little kids, like judo has, in all of these countries, people have been groomed since they were 3, 4, 5 years old to do judo, right? And they've grown up in a system in Japan and in Russia and all over the Europe where they've done judo since little kids. And they've got 500,000 people in France doing judo, for example, right? Mm. So the person that comes out at top is going to be very, very skilled. They're 100% dedicated to judo. Yeah. And that's 200 and something nations worldwide where you've got judo that starts as the little kid level and goes all the way up to Olympic level. If you look at ADCC rules, that's a brand new rule set that is just being introduced to the rest of the world and is just now getting organized around the world. Like, I'm in partnership with the ADCC through Fuji Mats, and we help support the growth of the organization. And they're now like, on, I don't want to say on steroids, but like that organization has exploded. It has really exploded, Shintaro. Like, the rest of the world is starting to get into no-gi grappling, and a lot of wrestlers, you know, specifically D1 wrestlers are getting into that sport. A lot of judoka are now getting into that sport. Like, there's a lot of people that are starting to get into no-gi jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And it is growing exponentially. Around the planet, it's growing exponentially. I think it's the fastest growing sport in the world right now, other than probably pickleball. You know, no-gi grappling is the second biggest growing sport in the world. And in the next 10 years, it's just going to continue to explode. So, but is it the Olympics? It's the Olympics of grappling. But how many people actually do no-gi grappling since they were little kids until they're adults? Yeah. Not many countries. The United States, really strong now. Mm. Brazil, really strong. But the rest of the planet, not really.
Okay, so same question. Yeah. Comparable judo Olympics, wrestling Olympics. I know this is like a popular thing that people have been like clipping from, you know, Cejudo talking about it, Kayla talking about it. And because you wrestled Division One, you wrestled Brown, and then, you know, everybody around you in Boston area, they also wrestle cross train too, right? So you know a lot, and your brother wrestles at a very high level. So your son, sorry. So where does that, like, sort of, what is your comparison on that? With judo, wrestling, making an Olympic team, being out there on that circuit, are they very different or?
They are very different. Again, it goes back to the number of countries and the number of countries doing the sport full time from the time they're a little kid until they're an adult.
Yeah.
You know, at that Olympic level. Even the United States doesn't do Olympic wrestling from the little kid age. We do folk style wrestling.
Very true.
All the little kids in this country grow up doing high school and collegiate folk style wrestling. They don't even get into freestyle, some of them.
Yeah.
Until they're after college. And then they start learning leg laces and they start learning, you know, the
game.
Yeah,
government and such,
that.
Yeah. Parterre.
But it's obviously trickled down lower and lower to the high school level because a lot of kids in the summertime, all they do is freestyle. They compete
They go to Fargo, right?
Correct, right. They compete in a lot of events now. But the United States is the best in the world in wrestling right now.
Yes.
Like our athletes are number one in the world. We're the Japan of judo.
Yeah,
but we're, you know, American wrestling is what Japan is in judo right now—the number one team in the world. So we dominate.
It's more than Russia.
Harder. It's far, yeah. Right now, we're better than Russia in wrestling. Our athletes, and we're deeper than Russia. We've got guys 2-3 deep that could win an Olympics. They just can't make our Olympic team. It's far harder to make our Olympic team than it is actually sometimes to win that Olympic gold medal for the Americans. But I would say it's still harder to win an Olympic medal in judo than it is to win an Olympic medal in wrestling, just because, again, it comes down to the number of athletes that do the sport full-time from the little kid level and the number of countries that participate in the sport as well, and the number of countries that are investing money in the sport as well.
That's true. And so, U.S. Olympic
judo,
team.
Globally, judo is a much bigger sport than wrestling is, but in the United States, wrestling blows judo away. It's 100 times bigger in the United States. It's easier to make our Olympic team. It's easier to make our Olympic team in judo than it is in wrestling, without question.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I guess a lot of people make this sort of misunderstood, like, perception on, like, oh, BJJ is 10 times harder, because it's much more visible that jiu-jitsu population is much bigger here, right? So people kind of assume, like, oh, winning ADCC is much more difficult because there's all these people doing it here. And it doesn't seem like there's a big population of judo here, but in our home turf, there's not a lot of people doing it, right?
Correct. So, it's not a recognized sport in this country, really.
So how do you make an Olympic team in wrestling? Do you know the system there too?
I don't, but you know, all Olympic sports now are based on a world criteria. So the United States, I believe in wrestling, the United States athlete has to qualify the division. So we can send, you know, whatever representative we want around the world. If they're ranked as an American in the top probably 15 or something in the world, if an American is ranked in the top 15 in the world, we get a slot to send our best guy to the Olympics. And then they have a wrestle-off in the United States, which athlete is going to go to the Olympics and take that slot. So we still have an Olympic trials in the sport of wrestling to go to the Olympic Games. But that's because we're really deep. Like at the world in wrestling, there's like 10 weight classes in the world championships.
Yeah.
But at the Olympic Games, it shrinks down to like six. There's only six or seven weights in wrestling at the Olympics. So we've got like... Jordan Burroughs, for example, world champion, let's say at 79 kilos, he has to, that weight is not an Olympic weight. He has to cut to 74 kilos and wrestle against Kyle Day to make the slot.
So a lot of times
we have two of our two world champions wrestling off for the one Olympic slot because they cut one of their weight classes out. It's not an Olympic weight class.
Were you there when the Olympic trials had judo and wrestling in the United States? Remember that one? Were you around for that? You competing then, right? Didn't you win it?
That was awesome.
Did you win it or no?
That was awesome. I loved it. Yeah.
That was so cool, right? We had judo, wrestling. Like, it was side by side. How amazing was that? I would love to see something really like that again. I think that's like a once-in-a-lifetime event. Right? I don't think it'll ever happen again. Did you compete in that?
I think I was coached. That was 2008, if I'm not mistaken.
It was 2008. Yeah.
So I was coaching my first guys at the Olympic trials then.
Yeah, I remember Travis made that, right? He was he was there for that. Wow. Man, Eldred, DiPopolo, all those guys, right?
Olsen beat Rick Hahn at that trials.
That's right. Wow, man, those days.
Travis beat Cohen.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about like the Olympics and like you're talking about professional athletes internationally, right? These guys get paid to do their sport. And I'm sure people want to know, like, everyone always asks me, like, what is it like with the professional system in Japan? But outside of that, I don't really know what, you know, the professional pay scale is for a lot of these countries. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. I'm sure people find that really interesting.
Huge disparity. Some countries have no money. Some athletes fund themselves to all of the events.
Yeah.
They get no money to travel. They don't get a stipend. They get nothing. They just do it because they love it. And they can't wait to make the Olympic team. And they've got the money to go spend.
Yeah.
Then on the other side of that, you have countries like Japan and Russia. When Gamba was running the Russian national team, Olympic team, his budget was $20 million per year.
Wow.
For his athletes, to pay his athletes, to train his athletes, to compete across on the world stage. The Russian team was sending a team to every IJF World Tour event. And all of those athletes, including their juniors, get paid a monthly stipend to do judo full time. The guys that just took the falls for the national guys got like $500, $700 a month just to be the training partner for the people that are trying to make it. Mm. And the national team probably gets $3,000 a month as a stipend to train. Plus they get their housing, they get their food, they get all of their international travel covered.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they win the prize money along the way. You know, to do judo full time, and those guys when they win a world medal or an Olympic medal, they're getting paid $1 million. They're getting paid $250,000. They're getting paid real money, you know, when they succeed.
What about the U.S.?
The United States right now probably has. When I was coaching, they had five athletes that got paid monthly stipends. They were on contract to be professional athletes, and they made anywhere from like $40,000 a year. Up to $80,000 a year as their salary. Yeah. But then they had bonuses on top of that where our top athlete might make $120,000 a year and our other athletes had a chance to make like $60,000 a year doing judo full time plus getting all of their trips paid for plus whatever money they could get in sponsorship.
That's not right now though, right? That's not right now?
Right now, I don't know who's being paid, but it's a similar system where let's say our top athlete, Angie Delgado, Jack Gineska, You're probably getting paid somewhere between $1,500 and $2,500 a month between the Olympic Committee and USA Judo to train full time. They're on contract to train full time, and a lot of their travel is being picked up either by USA Judo, the Olympic Committee, or by, you know, NYC and sponsors.
That's right. That's right. What about Canada? You know, they have a carded system, right? Like card level A, B. That was a nice system too. They got, you know, what is $4,000, $3,000, something like this a month.
So yeah, I don't know the stipends that they're getting, but the Canadian system is funded by their lottery. So their lottery gives money to their Olympic Committee. Their Olympic Committee gives money to their sport.
The lottery, has
a budget. Yeah.
The
government lottery.
Oh.
Funds their sports program.
Oh wow, that's pretty cool.
You know, but our budget in the United States is somewhere around $600,000 to $700,000 a year. That's to run every program we have in the country. That includes senior athletes, junior athletes, paid staff, Olympic level, you know, that's training centers, that's everything. You got $600,000 to $700,000. I think the budget in Canada is more like $1.5 million.
Oh, wow. I mean, it shows, right, with the results, you know, because you kind of need money to go to these tournaments. You know, it's not like in jiu-jitsu. It's like, oh, let me go to the Charleston Open and gain, you know, IBJJF points, and let me go to the New Haven Open and do this. You can't do that in judo. You got to go to Europe. You got to go to Japan, like you said. And it's very costly. Each one of these trips are like 5-6 G's minimum, right?
Yeah.
So you go to 10, that's $50,000-$60,000 that just goes straight out of the pocket.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. You need a lot of money to go to judo. As an American, you need a lot of money to be on the Olympic team today.
Man, so if you're listening and if you don't have a lot of money, don't even try to make an Olympic team. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. You got to have financial backing.
Yeah, you do.
You got to have the financial backing. Or, you know, you can. When I was competing, I was fortunate, Shintaro.
Yeah.
I had a Japanese man who was a host father to me.
Yes.
You know, through a mutual friend, an exchange program. I went to Japan for 6 months. He gave me a place to stay. Mm. I didn't pay any money in rent. He sponsored me as an athlete.
Oh,
I got up and I worked out with him on Sundays in the morning. I'd have to go to judo training on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
After getting the crap kicked out of me for Monday through Saturday, I'd have to get up on Sunday and do uchikomis with my host father, Mr. Homa.
Yeah.
I'd go to the gym. We'd do like 500 uchikomis. We'd do some weightlifting. We'd go in the sauna. He'd take me to dinner.
Yeah.
They say, good luck training, you know, good luck training for the next week. But I was lucky. I had someone that looked after me. And at the same time, United States Judo, the Federation, they took care of me too. I was getting a monthly stipend to train full time because I was, I had world medals, I had Olympic medals. So I was getting $2,000 a month, $3,000 a month.
And New York Athletic Club too sponsored you too, right?
Yep. NYC was a big, without the NYC, I wouldn't have ever medaled in the Olympics. I would have had no chance.
Wow.
I wouldn't have had the funding to do so. And the same with Kayla, same with Travis, same with all the athletes that went through Ronda Rousey, all the athletes that went through the New York Athletic Club. Without that club, they don't win their medals because they didn't get supported. You know, you don't get supported from the Olympic Committee until you win something. But how do you get to win something when you don't have any money like me?
Yeah.
My parents were divorced. Yeah. You know, I was in college as a starving college kid. My parents were divorced, a firefighter and a teacher. They didn't have money to send me around the world.
Yeah.
NYC funded me until I was good enough to get the money from the Olympic Committee. Mm. You know, and the same with Kayla, and the same with Travis, and the same with Rhonda. They got funded by the NYC.
Yeah.
Then they got good enough. They got money from the Olympic Committee. Then they could go on and win an Olympic medal because, you know, they were posting good results.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many different paths to get there, right? Like, I've heard people who were, like, on the U.S. Army team in wrestling, like, guys who are in the Marines, they're on the wrestling team. Their entire job is to just wrestle, and they get a paid salary as if they were, like, you know, doing Marine duties, you know?
Right.
And I know a guy in Italy, he's a firefighter, but he doesn't have to do any firefighting duties. He doesn't have to run into burning buildings. He just has to train and then compete in the World Fire Games, Police Games. Same with, you know, a lot of countries, like I think Germany has something like that too.
Yeah, they do. So these guys, it's a world-class army, you know, World Army Combatives Program. They basically take the best of the Army, Navy, Air Force. They put them in a combative type environment. They train full-time. And they actually represent the military in their competitions. And Germany does it. And a lot of, like, their policemen, firemen, army people. And that's their job, train judo full-time, go represent our country, you know, as a combat athlete or as a soldier, and they represent them proudly, and they get paid a salary as if they were a firefighter or a policeman, and it's amazing.
The Japanese Pro League is something else, though, right? They get a corporate position, right? You work for Toyota, you work for, I don't know, like a gambling thing or this. It's like regular corporations. You know, like Park 24, do you know them?
Yeah.
It's a parking lot company.
Yeah.
And they have like a corporate division and like a finance division, an accounting division, and there's a judo division where you get paid a full salary as a salaried employee going through your yearly thing, and there's a performance bonus, right? Like that's the way to go, really. If you could get
You put the big logo on your chest. You go to judo. You go to judo. You hang out. Wake up late. Go to judo in the evening. Get your 15 rounds in. And when it comes time to the company tournament, everybody's watching. You want you you know make sure that the Pac 24 guys beat the JRA Racing guys. Just do five man team event. Five against five. Best team wins. Yeah. And then they're the pride of their company.
Yeah, what a cool system.
A lot of money into that program. A lot of betting, too.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of money. That's what we need. Man, so if you were to leave everyone who's listening who has Olympic aspirations, and, you know, I talked to a lot of BJJ guys, and they're always like, hey, I want to make an Olympic team in judo. What does that even look like? And, you know, I'm not going to be one to say, don't even try, it's stupid. You know, I'm not trying to say that. But, like, I want to encourage them to try to get onto the judo path as well, because we want to grow judo in the country.
So,
right? So what would you say to those guys who are maybe young guys or jiu-jitsu guys?
Start right now. Because as Shintaro and I talked about, every Olympics up until 2028, you have to qualify around the world. You have to be top 16 in the world. That's a very tall order for any Brazilian jiu-jitsu person to try to aspire to be. Yeah. However, in 2028, the United States is going to host the Olympics. We, the American team, we are going to have seven men and seven women represent the United States. We have to put one person in every weight class, or we get the privilege to put our best athlete in every weight class on that Olympic team. So we need the best seven men and the best seven women are going to represent Team USA in LA 2028. If you're going to start judo, now's the time to start, because you're going to get a chance to qualify, and it's going to be the easiest time ever in the history of the United States to qualify for the Olympics. And that's going to be 2028. And listen, I was even talking to like Shanji about Victor Hugo. Like, if I can get Victor Hugo to fight heavyweight right now, we might be able to put him on the Olympic team in 2028.
You know, because
he's
Hugo,
six foot six. He's got a great background. He already has good. He could actually make our U.S. Judo Olympic team as a heavyweight. And he's to be the best jiu-jitsu guy and then the best judo guy with the right training and preparation.
Yeah.
Step on the mat. And we need to recruit a strong heavyweight, female and male, for the 2028 games, because at the Olympics there's also going to be a team tournament. So it's three women and three men.
Yeah.
One of the men and one of the women is the heavyweight. Wow. So we need good heavyweight in order to be competitive at that Olympics as in the team event. So now's the time to start. If you're a jiu-jitsu athlete and you want to make the transition, I say go find a judo dojo and get started today, because we might even have a trials. So the best American might get a shot at our U.S.-based trials to make that Olympics. USA Judo hasn't decided yet how they're going to pick the team, but I venture to guess it might be a trials-based opportunity.
You know what? I would love to see you make a comeback and try to make that team. I would love to see that. Would you ever? Does that even enter your mind? It's gotta. It has to.
I gotta go get. If I'm gonna do that, I gotta go get knee surgery, because I'm in so much pain with my knee. I'd have to have it fixed so I get full range of motion before I could even.
Let's start right now, Sensei. You got to do it right now. Today's the day. Let's get knee surgery. How's your shoulders?
I'm good. I actually tore my bicep. Oof. So I had a lot of pain in my shoulder, and I didn't know why I had pain in my shoulder for so long.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, one day I did one push-up, and I tore the bicep tendon, and now I'm pain-free. The pain's gone. I can do everything, full range of motion.
Did you fix your bicep?
Nope. It just functions.
That's crazy.
I don't need it anymore. It works.
Yeah. Wow, 2028. That's a whole thing, huh? Coming up.
I'll only be 58, Shintaro. What do you think?
Nah, you got it. You know, Big Jim was benching 225 until he's 70, right? Is that right?
Pretty much.
How old is he now? Because I remember when I was there at your gym, he was in his 70s, and he's been, what do you bench, kid? I was like, I don't know, 225 for like seven. He's like, well, I'm benching 225. Like, you got no business. Right, so you still good, right?
He's 77 years old now.
Is he still benching? I hope he's benching.
He still works out twice a day, every day.
What a savage. I love that.
He is.
Man, tell him I said hi.
I will do, brother.
All right, Jimmy. Thank you so much. This is a great episode. If you guys are listening, find Jimmy Pedro on what is your Instagram, Jimmy Pedro?
At Jimmy Pedro USA.
At Jimmy Pedro USA and then Fuji Sports US.
Fujisports.com and Fujibats.com, baby.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you very much, Jimmy.
All right, brother. Appreciate you.